Hello and welcome to this very special episode of Across the Aisle. Today we're going to take you on a journey through our immersive experience of the Triage Live Art Collective's performance of Infirmary, which was at North Melbourne Town Hall in November. It was also staged in Sydney earlier in 2018. This will be a first-person narrative episode of mine and Phil's experience, so we invite you to think about your experiences of sickness, death, being cared for, and what ails thee, and come on a journey with us. I arrive at clinic feeling a bit nervous. I don't know what I'm going to expect. I go to reception and check in, and I'm directed to go and sit in the waiting room, or waiting hallway, I should say. There's several other patients who are being admitted that day, sitting with me, some friends chatting nervously. There's millions of Better Homes and Gardens, old magazines, old women's weeklies. Everybody studiously ignores them. Then the nurses arrive. The nurses come and take us one by one into the clinic. And they sit us down and go through the onboarding patient form. We're asked things like, do we have problems with scents? I do. But essential oils? No. Do I have any allergies? Do I have any food allergies? Have I been hospitalized in the last 12 months? Am I okay with people touching me? Which makes me feel very nervous. I say yes, tentatively. Where will you touch me? And the most poignant question we're asked is, what ails you? Which took me a second to think about. And derivatively, or literally derivatively, I say my chronic anemia.
I rode my bike to the infirmary through rain and hail, my clothes getting more and more saturated, and as a vulnerable cyclist, my thoughts turned to my own death. Appropriately enough, I was about to experience it, IRL, at this strange show at the Arts House. It was opening night, Carla had booked my ticket, so I was known as Carla while waiting to meet my doctor, who seemed a little perplexed about the name. But this was just the beginning of the dissociation that was going to be the defining feature of this experience. Conversation in the waiting room was very opening night. There were people complaining about being taken off the MTC list. People were gossiping scathingly about Geoffrey Rush. And then all of a sudden, people in lab coats arrived and whisked some of us off into the first stage of the experience. Oddly, a woman was called Sean, as I was called Carla, and entered into the conversation room. My nurse-like man was an older person, very attentive, very gentle in his questioning. And at this space, the theme of submission to care that was present in the description of the piece began. The caring questions about how I was feeling, what I was afraid of, whether I was sensitive to A, B, or C, lulled me into whatever it is that we do in hospitals and medical environments to contain what is so existential that we are dying, that our experience in these spaces is likely to be during periods of time when we are close to death. And this fine line between aliveness and deadness was present even in this gentle conversation where I confessed to my fear of abandonment and then was taken downstairs into the hospital space.
We're now going to be onboarded into hospital. We're led down into the emergency room and we're given our own cubicle. And the nurse tells us to disrobe and put on the hospital robe, but please leave our underwear on, which makes me laugh. I get into my hospital robe and tuck myself into my bed and lie waiting, my heart already starting to pound a little bit. I feel excited and nervous. I'm looking forward to lying down for a whole bunch of time. The nurse said to me that hopefully I can get some kind of relaxation or restorative experience today, considering my chronic anemia making me so exhausted. I've been hospitalized more times than I can think, so this is a space that is very familiar to me. I go through the muscle memory process of trying to relax myself into these spaces where there's so much noise, so much unknown that is going to happen to me or is already happening to me that nobody can explain. I am blindfolded with a bandage and have a pair of headphones placed over my head. Various hospital soundscapes now float into my ears. The beeping of heart monitors, the shuffling of shoes, the muffled of voices. It strikes me that this is such a romanticized version of hospital, because really when you're in that situation, you're also dealing with the blood-curdling screams of people on ice coming down and the harrowed screams and shuffles of masses of professionals running from one emergency to the other. It makes me feel very relaxed. And the audio continues. We're given a hot water bottle. It feels too hot on my stomach, but I don't feel like I can move it. I feel comfortable with where it's placed and actually that it is too hot. We're given a sponge bath on our arms, very gently having our arms and hands washed, our faces. And we are given or experience some kind of essential oil is waved over our face. It's a very strong smell, but it doesn't have any memories attached to me, so it just acts as a separation. It clears my mind. The audio continues and it's interspersed between the hospital noises with people telling their stories of their experiences around death, people who have died, people who are dying, young people who are talking about their older family members who will die. The experiences are interesting, but I'm so relaxed to the point that I can't really hear them anymore. I want to go to sleep.
It's always confronting, even when you know it's going to happen, to be asked to remove your clothes by somebody you're not intimate with. It happens when you get massages and happened here in this darkened space next to my hospital bed. Just take your clothes off. Put on this hospital gown. Totally normal theatrical experience. But, again, I said yes and submitted. After all, the triage group had invited us, I think pretty convincingly, to practice for death. And I was willing to accept that if that was an event that was available, I should fully participate. So there I was, under the blanket, in my hospital gown, feeling more and more vulnerable, but also more and more comfortable. There's something about hospital environments that deaden the senses, that bring your sensitivity and acuity into a really contained space of these tiny single beds with these overtucked sheets. They're confining and constraining and limiting and diminishing, as I discovered in a tactile way during this experience. Then, after being wheeled to another space while blindfolded and with headphones on, a whole series of rituals took place that brought my existential sense of vulnerability to a kind of crescendo, if you can call it that.
And then I am wheeled away. I am ready for surgery, or I am ready for further processing. Just like a normal hospital experience, I don't really have any idea of what's going on or what a whole team of people who feel they have more authority over my body will do to me. I'm wheeled around and around and around, and it seems like I will be wheeled out into the street. I get wheeled so far away. But I have no idea whether I'm going in circles or if it's just a perception. My lizard brain kicking in to being freaked out by the unknown. I reach the operating theatre, or my final destination. And this is when I flatline and the nurse runs to me to perform CPR.
By this stage, I was sensing that my death was approaching. I was feeling cold even before the hot water bottle was suddenly removed from my chest. I was feeling static even before my hands and arms were ritually cleansed and placed in a sort of corpse-like formation over my body. And then a moment took place, which I knew was the end of my life. And I also realized at that moment that death is the only profound thing there is. Everything is about it. Everything is moving towards it. And so to have this opportunity to finally do that thing that we are all living towards, that essential defining characteristic of human aliveness, was an amazing gift. I was willing to remain in whatever dark space I was in. And in fact, one of the moments of comedy was when I was gently woken by my nurse-like figure, now wearing a kind of wartime nurse's hat and looking back at me as my eyes opened. It was lovely to experience these silly things at times throughout the experience. I would categorize the removal of the hot water bottle as similarly silly. We can't maintain reverence and seriousness all the time in spaces where people are dying.
I'm dead. I have soundscapes running through my ears. Nothing discernibly of this world. It sounds like air, it sounds like thoughts, it sounds like energy. And this goes on for a long period of time, or a short period of time. I have no concept of time by this point. Most of my senses have been gone for so long. I have no indication of anything. I lie there for a long time, almost asleep, contemplating what it is to be cared for, how easily I take to these situations, that I am so conditioned to accept this kind of care, whether it's good or bad, most of the time it's good, and that I can instantly turn off and be inert and let my mind and imagination run wild. I feel relaxed to the point of sleep. I still stay there for a very long time. And then suddenly, very gently, my bandage is peeled away from my eyes and there's a bright light with three nurses standing in my direct view. Their silhouettes, the silhouettes of their hats are the only thing I can see because my sight is so sensitive. It takes me a very long time to be able to pull them into focus. I'm extremely light sensitive anyway. And my main nurse whispers in my ear, "Are you back?" To which I reply, "Yes." And she asks me if I would like a cup of tea and how I have it. And she brings me a black cup of tea with some cookies, and I sit up slowly coming back to this world in a ward with about 8 other women also in the process of coming back to life. We sit for a long time drinking our tea and eating our cookies. There are some girls that have come together and are looking at each other, trying to read each other, nervously kind of smiling and giggling at each other. It makes me angry because it feels like they're not taking part of the experience, but really they're just trying to settle their nerves or compress or contextualize the things that they've experienced. But it still made me mad. Once we have all come back and eaten our earthly foods, we are brought back to our starting point, to the emergency room. And we are told that we're allowed to leave now.
So as I got dressed again, I realized that part of my willingness to remove my clothes was that they were saturated from my bike ride through the hail. Putting them back on gave me an immediate sense of fragility and clamminess that comes from being alive. There was almost a sense of regret about moving out of this constrained and comfortable dark experience of dying and returning to Melbourne in all of its complexity, demanding so much stoicism from those who live in it. So off I rode in my saturated clothing, thinking a lot about the voices that had been in our headphones as we lay in those beds, voices of people who are close to the dying or close to their own death, ultimately sharing a sense that death is as natural as anything else, and that as it happens, people will be ready for whatever experience comes with it, whatever mental, spiritual, or physical elements accompany those closing moments of our life. The weather was nicer, I cycled more freely, and felt indeed that this practice for death had been worthwhile, that when my next death comes, I'll be more ready for it.
Phew, fancy seeing you here.
Is this the afterlife?
Outpatient clinic? Have you come back for your checkup?
It was too fast, the coming back, but here I am.
Was it?
I wasn't ready for the cup of tea. I wanted to stay dead.
Did you? It felt like an eternity to me.
Really?
And like nothing at the same time.
Mm.
So tell me about, okay, I'll just ask my like burning question that I have.
Mm-hmm.
Were you separated into like a men's ward in the end? Was it just men?
I might have been. At least there was some confusion because I was Carla at the start because you'd booked the ticket.
Oh, yeah.
And I reckon they were being careful to get the gender right, but confused by my name.
Okay.
But I had a male person.
Didn't we put name tags on though?
Yeah.
Am I imagining that?
I think I stayed Carla for a while.
Okay.
I eventually switched.
All right.
But yeah, I reckon I was mostly surrounded by guys.
Yeah, because I woke up in an all-female ward, quote-unquote female,
mm-hmm.
Which gave me this total experience of, like, exactly what happens to you after an abortion.
Oh.
It was so weird. Mm. It was like exactly that situation where you're just all in the same room together, all of you waking up, getting a sweet cup of tea and some biscuits. And I was like, did anyone think about this? Or is it just our medicalized gender binary world?
Well, I reckon I might have had some women in that final moment of waking up in the room with me, but I didn't want to look around.
Okay.
I was still
returning. I was trying to as well, but I had some people next to me and across from me that had all come together. There was like three women who had come together, and they were like nervously giggling and shooting looks at each other and stuff. And I was just in my mind, I'm like, shut the fuck up.
Absolutely.
I was so angry.
That's wrong.
Whilst also trying to like keep my zen.
Yes.
My death zen.
Yes. Well, the funny thing about other people on my night was that because it was opening night, there was all of this gossipy theatre critic stuff going on in the waiting room.
Oh, before. No, that sucks. So
I was aware that, oh, the guy from The Age and the person distressed about no longer being on the MTC list were both in the room. So I couldn't forget that. That kept me in a little bit of a Brechtian
sort of
mind.
No, I didn't want to come back. Keep me there.
Tell me about the person who looked after you.
Oh, my God. She was so darling. Mm. I wish I'd gotten her name. She was a New Zealander, I hope. Mm-hmm. It sounded like she had a Kiwi accent. She was really little. And you haven't seen Adventure Time, have you? She really reminds me of a character on Adventure Time. And I don't know. Like, is it – I don't know. I feel like it's maybe deluded and egomaniacal to say, but I really feel like we had a moment together.
Mm.
Yeah, I feel like we really shared a moment, particularly like when I woke up.
Okay.
Because I was really feeling it, and I don't know if that was also in relation to the other people that were there that were like not fully immersing themselves in the experience. Mm. So maybe when you come across someone who really wants to connect, you really take that. Mm. So I don't know. But yeah.
Well, I felt something similar. So that must have been by design, or at least I think they'll be pleased with our shared sense that there was intimacy and connection with the carer. I mean, those questions in the first room did invite a kind of sharing, a kind of confessional.
Sure.
And when they got to the final question, what ails thee?
Yes.
I think it was actually in answer to that question that I talked about my fears, essentially, including abandonment. And so this carer, I think, rightly was focused on making sure that I didn't feel abandoned within the experience.
Oh, that's beautiful because, like, this whole work is, I think, super metaphorical for art in general. Like, you know, art is the salve for the soul, and this was like a literalization of that. But I really felt that. I think it was good for the performers to literally feel that feedback, be in contact with that feedback. Like, I'm sure it's quite a grueling show to put on, but to have that direct one-on-one contact with your audience, I felt like there was that feedback loop that they hope is there, but don't necessarily get.
Say more about the metaphorical reading, because I haven't thought about that.
Oh, well, I actually just thought about it when you were talking about it. And I was like, oh, yeah, art is a nice warm hug. You know, art is 99% theatre is where I had a safe space to rebuild my emotional life after having an incredibly abusive childhood. You know, theatre was where I could go and try on different emotions, try on different experiences in a safe place in the dark, on my own, and it not have any consequence to my daily life, and to understand what that felt like in an environment that wasn't threatening, you know, and it gave me an emotional literacy as an adult, and it really healed me, you know, and I think that from what anecdotally I've heard from artists, they're compelled to make art a lot of the times in that reverse. It just comes out of them in a way that heals them, but also is an offering to others who are suffering in the same way.
I certainly felt more profoundly alive and aware of my mortality at the same time as a result of this piece. But as you speak, I realize that sometimes when I'm watching an opera, something similar happens.
Yeah. I don't really have much more to say about it, I guess.
We just need to stay.
Are you curious? Do you have any more questions?
Well, I just want to stay with triage. You know,
oh my
They mentioned in some of the publicity around this that this was part of a trilogy. That is wonderful because I can't get enough and I find all of their performances that we've experienced so generous and so weird. You know, they're in their own category of art making for me. And even though there is a lot of live art being produced and talked about, this is at a different level. This is sort of sideways from some of that other, perhaps more narcissistic content that's around.
1,000%. And while we're unraveling this, it also made me think that, you know, like I really went deep into this, like quite sort of out-of-body experience. And I think the thing that I love about this organization the most is how seriously they take their responsibility in creating a dialogue with an audience.
Yeah.
And that's something that, you know, like I've seen a lot of works this year that have really, you know, in the least irritated me at the greatest, like I've found highly offensive.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. It's like that's that narcissism mirror kind of stuff. It's like there's no it's like I need to put this into the world, but it's like there's no consideration of how it's going to affect the audience that you want to attract to it.
Yeah.
You know, and so to have that 360 loop of this production, to have that care, literal, to be emblematic of that is really quite remarkable.
And maybe just that word care is enough to do a U-turn for some of these other types of performance. These art makers had care at the center of this work, but I agree that it defines the other work by them that we've seen, that they're aware that there's a kind of mutual experience between audience and performer, and ethically that means we have to look after each other.
Mm.
One of the phrases from their publicity is to be cared for now and in your final days. So that emphasis on the present and the sort of intersection of the performer and the audience in a space that requires a kind of sensitivity was a beautiful thing to experience.
Mm. Absolutely. It really made me consider, because I've always just been so grateful to artists for what they do.
Mm.
I've had this real blind gratitude, but having seen an incredible amount of work this year, because now I'm on the Green Room panel, there's been some stuff out there that's been so off.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really made me reconsider the role of artist and audience member, because they're ultimately tied together.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that there are so many, not so many, but a few, enough for it to be problematic, makers out there that do not consider their audience in any way, shape or form has been really rattling thing for me to experience this year. So this was the antidote.
Yeah, how wonderful. Well, thank you for finding this and for taking me into these types of places. It's unfamiliar and addictive.
It's interesting because you know, it's like we're Freaky Friday-ing. You know, this has got you all over it.
Mm-hmm.
No, thanks for participating. Once I got in there, I was like, fuck, is Phil going to be okay with this? Again, I didn't know what it was though. You know
indeed,
what I mean?
Yeah. Indeed.
Thanks for participating
with
me.
Wonderful. Thanks, everyone.